just wanted to finish up the topic of Afkinu Rabbon and Kedusha Mineh, and then we'll move to the topic of the Shem of Onus Rachman Apatre, which is mentioned by Rafi here in the Sugya. We had mentioned all the different possibilities last week to the concept of Afkinu Rabbon and Kedusha Mineh, that the Rabbanon have the koach to remove Kedushin and in fact say retroactively they can unravel the Kedushin, where the Kedushin in a sense goes up in smoke, and therefore we view it as if they've never been married, halacha l'maisa. And there is a very, very fascinating discussion in the various Rishonim as to different applications of Afkinu and the Rabbanu Kedushin Mineh. But the Rashban, the Chuvis, points out very beautifully that even though there might be some applications that Rishonim make, as we mentioned last week, and we analyzed each sugya, there are only six gemaras and five cases in Shas that mention this rule of Afkinu. So we have to be very, very wary for us to expand and use it whenever we want, wantonly, and in any rhyme or reason that we feel is possible to use this. And one of the most stunning rayas that the Rashba quotes is a gemara in Kedushin Daf Nun Testament Beis in the beginning of the third parak of Kedushin, where the Mishnah tells us that if a man appoints an agent to mekanish a woman on his behalf, and the agent goes ahead and is mekanish the woman to himself, he in essence steals the woman from his mishaleach, from the person that appointed him to do, to fulfill, to send the kedushin. And the Mishnah and the Gemara explain explicitly that the shliach can in essence chop the woman, and in a sense, he can steal away the woman from the person that appointed him, and the Kedushin is chal. However, writes the Gemara, he's noig bo minig ramaus. However, the Gemara writes, by acting in such a way, he's acting like a tricker. He's acting like a person that is a charlatan, a person that's not a mensch, and therefore we assume that he's doing something not correctly from a Derech Eretz perspective, but from a halakhic level, his Kedushin is chal. So the Rashba writes, you see from this Gemara, the case was a man appointing a shliach, an agent, to marry a Mekadosh, a woman on his behalf, and the shliach takes the woman himself. And the Gemishna says that Kedushin is chal, but he's noig bo minig ramos. It's trickery what the man did. So the Rashba says, in such a case, we mentioned two Gemaras last week, in Yavamas and Baba Basra, where a man acted like a mechutzef, where the man, in a sense, in a chasana, took away the woman. And it was mekadosh the woman. So the Gemara said, who else is Shalok Hogan? We remove the Kedusha from him. A shotgun mirrors, the Gemara Baba Basra and Chesem and Beis. He acted improperly, we take away the Kedusha, Afkinu. So the Rashba says, why don't we say Afkinu here? Here the shlich went in and took the woman, was mekadosh the woman himself. So you see, says the Rashba, you see how hesitant the Gemara was from invoking Afkinu. This would have been a classic example, says the Rashba and the Chuvis, that we should have said Afkinu, but we don't. We stay away from it. And therefore the Kedushin of the shlich, that he was mekadosh the woman to himself, is chal. He was noig bo minig ramos, was he considered to be a mechutzef? Without a doubt, but we don't strip away the Kedushin. And that's the Rashba's stunning proof, stunning raya, that we constrict this rule to the greatest degree. Another example that the Rashba gives in those tshuvas, the Rambam discusses in Perek Dalet Hilchos Ishus Halacha Vav, what's the halacha if a man is mekadosh a woman in front of Eidim, but those Eidim are posel Midrabbanan. There are two types of psulim that we have in halacha that would invalidate Eidim. One is a psul d'oraisa, and one is a psul d'rabbanan. The Rambam in Hilchos Eidus writes, the two psulim d'oraisa are the following. Number one is, if someone transgresses a lav sheyesh bo maisa, that he would be chayav malchus for. And number two is, if he's a ganav, if he's a rasha d'chamas. If he's a ganav, is involved in thievery, that also will invalidate him from being kosher l'edus. Those are two psulim on a level of d'oraisa. And then the Rambam writes, there is a psulim in the Rabbanan that we have, and that's the Mishnah that is recorded in Sanhedrin on Chav Dalad days, where the Mishnah lists off different rabbinic psulim. For example, a masachik bekuvia, a gambler, is considered the posel edus midrabbanan. And the Gemara gives us two reasons why a gambler is posel edus. One is because he is eino osik b'yeshuva shel olam. He's not contributing to society. All he cares about is making money for himself. And the other is asmachta lo kanya, which means that in halacha there are three elements to every kinyan, to every financial transaction. There is the willingness of the buyer, there is the willingness of the seller, and there is a need to have an action, a maisa kinyan. When I put the money on the table, the psychology of a gambler is that he will always win, says Rashi. And therefore, when I lose, and the fellow on the other side of the table takes the money from me, he is considered to be robbing me, because I am not willingly giving him the money. Asmach de lo kanya, meaning there is no real das. I'm only doing it because I think that I'm going to win. And when he takes the money, he's taking it against my will. To the degree that Tosfos says, why is a gambler not a real goslin? Why is he only postulatus midrabbanan, according to that rationale? So Tosfos says it's b'shogeg. When the fellow that wins wins all the money on the table, he's not stealing like a pickpocket, so therefore he's a goslin b'shogeg, so we downgrade it to being only a psul d'rabbanan. So we have two psulim on the level d'raisa. We have another psul, which is a rabbinic psul. What's the two fundamental differences between someone that's posel l'edus on a level of Yeraisa and posel l'edus on a level of the Rabbanan? There are two fundamental differences. Number one is, if someone is posel l'edus mid Yeraisa, he's posel from the moment he commits his sin. If he eats the ham sandwich, which is a lav sheish b'maisa, he wears shatnas, lav sheish b'maisa, he's posel l'edus from the time he commits the sin. If you are posel l'edus mid the Rabbanan, you're only posel l'edus from the time that Beis Din declares and makes an announcement that this man is posel l'edus. Until Beis Din makes that announcement, the person is not invalid rabbinically. If you transgress a biblical aveira, which is a lav sheish b'maisa, you become invalid from the time of the transgression. That's the first difference. The second difference is regarding the matters of Edus Isha that we mentioned last week. To allow a woman to get remarried, to verify that one's husband has died, do we trust a witness that is posel biblically, or do we trust a witness that is considered to be posel rabbinically? Says the Gemara in Yavamis on Daf Kaf Hei on the base, that if he's biblically invalid, he's posel d'oraisa, he's not acceptable, even in the area of Edus Isha, to allow a woman to remarry. But if he's rabbinically posel, if he's considered to be invalid rabbinically, we do accept him as a witness for matters to allow the woman to get remarried. So that's a fundamental distinction between the concept of biblically being posel midiraisa or being posel midirabbanan. And the two major distinctions are, from what time does it become posel? If it's diraisa, it's from the time of the transgression. It's the Rabbanan from the time that bathes and declares him. And second difference is in the area of Edus Isha. To allow a woman to get remarried, biblically invalid, we don't accept him. Rabbinically invalid, we make a special leniency and accept him. So the classic example of someone who's postulatus mid the Rabbanan is a gambler. And there are two reasons why a gambler is invalid. Either because he's not contributing to society, he's acting like a meshugana, or we assume it's mamish rabbinic robbery. Because when he puts the money on the table, he always thinks he's going to win. And asmachta, something you do on reliance of something, I put the money on the table, I think I'm relying on the fact I'm going to win. Therefore, when I lose, the fellow's a robber. What's the major difference between those two reasons why a gambler is posel? We could actually mention two differences. Let's say you only gamble on the weekend. If you say it's their concept of not contributing to society, what do you mean? He says, I work 9 to 5 from Monday to Friday. I gamble on the weekends. You can't posel me latest. The Gemara says, according to that reasoning, he would not be posel latest. But if you assume the rationale is rabbinic robbery, you can steal once a week or once a month or once a year. You're still a robber. And therefore, you would be invalid to be a kosher witness. The second nafkamina would be, let's say you have always lost in your life. You never once did you win. in poker. If you assume it's not contributing to society, so you're not contributing to society by sitting down at the table. If you assume, though, it's an issue of rabbinic robbery, you never won. So therefore, you would be kosher. Yeah, go ahead.
The whole mahalach of the Gemara ultimately is that we throw out its matzah. And we don't throw out it, it's more cogent that we're going to be saying that it's just a yishuv of all of that.
Right. It's a machlokas tanoim. It's machlokas reviewed in the Chachamim. It's a machlokas in the Gemara. It's been reviewed in the Chachamim.
But in the sugya, you have the sense that we're talking, I mean, that matzah part is really not an issue over there.
Well, that's the machlokes seen reviewed in the Chachamim. So you're right. Poshim Shah, that's the machlokes reviewed in the Chachamim. But no matter what you say, the truth of the matter is that by the notion of gambling, and I remember once I was, a friend of mine got married, and he asked me to be an aide on the Ksuba. And the great Rosh Yeshiva from Nir Yisrael, Rav Kalevsky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was Mesada Kedushin. And I never saw this done, but he asked the aidim. He asked me and my friend, we were the aidim on the Ksuba. He says, do we gamble, play cards? So I didn't, thank God. But my friend said, you know, once in a while, he plays a little bit. So Rav Kalevsky said that you should be mekabel upon yourself to do tshuva. And then he accepted him to be the aide. So my friend said yes, and he accepted to be witness. I never saw that done before, but it makes a lot of sense. If you're koshish, if you're concerned for that svar of asmach the lo kanya, should be a problem of being a gavim in the rabbanon. But that's a classic example of someone that's puzzled. Only midrabanan, not minatara. And the way that you would become kosher, and the Rav discusses this in our tshuva, is of course you have to do tshuva, but the Rav says, medayik from the Gemara and Sanhedrin Chafayim and Beis, you have chips in your closet that you play with poker, you must dispose of those chips. You have to destroy those chips. That's part of the process of tshuva. Not just tshuva of kapara, you must be metahar yourself. Al pidin, it's not trush, it's not a sermon. Al pidin, you have to get rid of those. Yeah, go ahead. Well, it's not really necessarily clear. First of all, it could be there might be a distinction between a Jew and non-Jew. See, the truth is, it's a machlokes, the machaber Ramah. The machaber in Shulchan Aruch Choshen Mishpat paskins that the problem of gambling is rabbinic robbery. The Ramah says it's an issue of not being involved in society. And in fact, Rav Avadya has an etuva where he paskins that it's usher for Sfardim to play the lotto in Eretz Yisrael. It's usher for them to play the lotto because it's an issue of rabbinic robbery. So I'm not necessarily sure, because I'm not necessarily sure that they're necessarily mochel. When you play,
who is they? The government.
I understand. But when you are playing, you are actually playing money, and the rationale and the thought process is that you're putting the money with the assumption that what? You're really going to win. Now, the odds might not be so, but the motivation that you're doing it, you have a very strong feeling that you might win. And therefore, perhaps when you lose, who says you're willingly giving up the money? So there is a distinction, a small right. If I'm playing with a non-Jew, so Gezel Akum is usher, but if it's rabbinic robbery, Gezel Akum, there is kulus.
Rabbinic robbery from yourself or from the person you...
No, from the person that you would collect money.
But you're collecting from the government.
No, but let's take a casino, or let's say the lottery, okay? Right. So I don't know necessarily if you have to assume like that, because I think Rav Avadya was assuming that it's in one pot, you put the money in, and the governing might be administering what's going on, but the truth is you might be taking from your friends or your fellow citizens of your country. And therefore, if it's a rabbinic robbery problem, maybe there's room to distinguish between a non-Jew and a Jew, but because of Kiddush Hashem, we never try to do that. The Bir HaGolah, the grandfather of the Goan, says, we paskin Gezel Akum is usher, the Gemara Nanda Baba Kama. There's a concept called Tos Akum, that if a non-Jewish cashier gives me extra money, Me'ikar Adin, I can take the money. I don't have to return it. But the Bir HaGolah said he found some Jews that became very wealthy by, in a sense, abusing this halacha, and they lost all their money. So he says, if you have an opportunity to do a Kiddush Hashem, you should absolutely return that money. Don't try to abuse that halakha of Tos Akum is Mutter. Fakir, he says, on the contrary, you should try to cause a Kiddush Hashem and return the money. So this is a concept that you might distinguish Lamaisa. And I remember Rabbi Shechter mentioned that, you know, even if you want to say alumnus, that the Ramah holds, that the problem of gambling is not contributing to society, but I work from 9 to 5 during the week, so what's the problem? Oh, Kedoshim Tiyu, the Ramban's mandate we mentioned last week, a fine A fine non-Jew, remember Rabbi Shekhar told us, a fine non-Jew looks down upon gambling. It's a notion of being involved in, as the Gemara writes in Sanhedrin, Leki Midi, the Yisrael Shari Lakum Usser. There's no category that for a Jew it's permissible, and for a non-Jew it's Usser. So if a non-Jew thinks a certain action is wrong, how can we say based on Alom that it's permissible for us? And moreover, it's an issue of Kedoshim Tiyu. Moreover, it could be an issue, very fascinating, the Mishnah in Shabbos, not well known, on that Kuf Mem Chesem Beis. The Mishnah writes in Masechet Shabbos that I am not allowed to go ahead and say the following to my children this Shabbos. Whoever comes home from shul first, because I want them to come home from shul. I don't want to have to wait and say Kiddush. I want them to be at home on time rather than play with their friends. So I cannot say to my children, whoever comes home from shul first will get a double portion of shulim. To the Feirush and Mishnah. And the Gemara says, why? It's a Gzeirin Mishum Kubiya. Because I can't even do that during the week. Because I might train them to be involved in games. The notion of games. And it's fascinating. The Shulta Giburim actually says that if it's considered to be a game of skill, then it's not a problem. But if it's a game of total risk, of chance, then I am prohibited, in a sense, to train my children in that type of concept. So you see that if it's risk or chance, that's prohibited. But if it's something that would be based on skill, let's say playing chess, let's say, or playing, I don't know, one-on-one basketball, then that would not fall under that umbrella of that Gzeira Mishum Kubia. That's one Svara given, Lakula. But I can show you the same Svara that is said Fakir, the opposite way by the Mordechai. The Mordechai says, on the opposite thing. Same Svara, really you'll find this in the sugya. He says, when I put the money on the table, the only time where it's usher is when it's a game of skill. If it's blackjack, and let's say I create an algorithm on my computer that I'll always win in blackjack, that's when it's a problem of rabbinic robbery, because I think that I'm not just going to win when I put the money on the table. But if it's a game of total chance, then he says, I really don't have in mind that I'm going to win, and therefore when I lose, he's not really stealing from me. So you see how the same chiluk was made by two different Rishonim that had two different conclusions. The Shulchan Gemurim said, a game of chance and risk, that's a problem, I can't train my kids to learn that. But if it's a game of skill of one-on-one, that there's no problem. But the Shulchan Gemurim says, no, if you take the svara of rabbinic robbery, then the only problem is when I put the money on the table, the only time I think I'm going to win is a game of real what? Of real skill. But if it's a game of chance, I never think I'm going to win. So you have both svaras, and that's why we're machmir in both directions. We're stringent, and we never try to advocate the notion of gambling. The Chuvas HaRosh writes in the Chuvas, it's amazing, that someone who's a gambler, they threw them out of the burial society. They wouldn't be kovar them in the Beis HaKfaris. And the Rosh writes in the Chuvas that someone loses their money in gambling, you cannot give them starkit. And the Pachad Yitzchuk, the great encyclopedic work from Italy, the great Gaon, writes one line, amazing. He says he feels that all the problems of Klal Yisrael are because of gambling. Amazing. This is what he postulates. And the Rosh writes in the Chuvas it led to divorces, it led to families being destroyed. So they speak the Rosh and the Rosh and Rishonim very strongly against this. But Masachik Bikuvi is the classic example, after we've said this whole Hakdamah, to someone who's Pasul Eidus Midr Rabbanim. So let's say we have a kedushin of a man to a woman in front of Eidim that are Masachik Bekuvia. What would you say? Pasul Eidus only Midr Rabbanim. So the Rambam writes in Ishus, Perek Dalet Olach above the following, in the middle of the piece. He writes, the Psula Eidus shall divrei Torah, the Psula Eidus shall divrei Sofrim, rather, or the Eidim shen Sofik Psula Eidus, im Ratsa Lichnos, Chozer Mekadosh Bekshenim. Vim Lav, vim Lo Ratsa Lichnos, Tzricha Get Mimenu Misofik. The man is Mekadosh a woman, says it's a good idea, if you were Mekadosher in front of gamblers, to re-Mekadosher. It's a good idea to re-Mekadosher. And if you don't re-Mekadosher, and she wants to marry another man, it's good that you have to give her a get me something. Says the Rosh Min Chuvas, why don't we just say Afkinu? Why don't we just say the Rabbanan of the Koach? If this excuse me, this gambler is postulatus rabbinically, why don't we just remove the Kedushin and unravel the Kedushin? Says the Rosh, but you see from the Rambam, we don't do this. Because we are very hesitant to say the rule of Afkinu anytime we want. This would have been a classic example. The gambler was only possible rabbinically. So say Afkinu. Say this is the Rosh, but we're very hesitant to say this rule. And we prove from the Gemara where the Shliach is Mekadosh the woman himself, it's a minig ramos. He acted like a tricker. He deceived the person that sent him. But the Gemara writes a Kedushin Eschal. Wouldn't that have been a beautiful case to say Afkinu? You see, again, we're very hesitant, says the Rashba, to say this notion of Afkinu. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Aren't we always concerned that, I mean, he's only partial aidas with the Rabbanan when the Rabbanan actually declared him to be partial. How does he know he's been declared the Rabbanan to be partial? And if Mana is there, would he have Rabbanan be able to have that power?
Yeah, they would have to. Absolutely. No, you would need a Beis Din to absolutely pronounce this fellow as being possum or abundant. Absolutely. Otherwise, it seems like it would not get off the ground, the rabbinic invalidation. It's an excellent point. Yeah, Beis Din could pronounce someone, if you have a Beis Din, right, a fine Beis Din that would pronounce a person rabbinically invalid. They have proof and everything. There was witnesses. Then absolutely. But until they make that announcement, it's a very good point. You're right.
We don't know for sure.
Right. It could be based on that, you're saying, even if someone asks us at the chasana, we're a gambler, yeah. But he was never declared.
Yeah.
Right. So you're right. It's a good kasha. It's a good kasha. Interesting kasha. Maybe that's why many other rabbanim don't ask, because until you're declared that, you're not. But maybe Rav Kolevsky was just trying to be machmir that, you know, we should be concerned. Maybe he's trying to give mussar to my friend. I don't think he's gambled since that day. That was 15 years ago. Yeah, go ahead. To invalidate that.
Correct.
Because the Rabbanim have the koach, perhaps, certainly in financial matters of Hefker, Beis, and Hefker, we mentioned last week, if you're Mekadosh a woman with a kinyan in the Rabbanim have the power to elevate it in financial matters, and then it'll work. And it could very well be also here that the Rabbanim have the power in general. All rabbinic laws originate from a pasuk in Chumash of Lo Tasur. So it could very well be that a rabbinic invalidation will have impact on a level of Yeraisa. And therefore, because the whole rabbinic invalidation comes from Lotasur, you cannot deviate from the words of the Chumash. And the koach of Lotasur is very strong. Not only can they create mitzvahs like Hanukkah and Purim, but they can give us directives how to fulfill a mitzvah Yeraisa, like eating matzah with Haseba. Haseba is not written anywhere in the Chumash. And the Torah mandate how we're supposed to eat that. If you don't eat the matzah and the oil seder with the seba, you're not yotzei the mitzvah. So too here. If they say that this man, a gambler, is possible in the Rabbanan, that might impact on a level of the Yeraisa, and therefore we'll say the Kedushin won't get off the ground. Possibly. The Rambam is mistopic about it. But I'm saying we would have easily said Afkinu here. But again, you see that hesitation that we will not say Afkinu unless it's mentioned in the Gemara. And we're going to now mention, God willing, a few other places in Rishonim that it is mentioned. That's why it's so important that we're mentioning, because we see that it's constricted, so we're going to dig up some places where it is used, the concept of Kinu. Yeah, go ahead. That takes the woman for himself. Yeah, go ahead. She fell in love with the Shliach. I mean, did she do a right thing? No. She did a wrong thing. Wasn't proper what she did.
She was,
you can't be Mekadosh a woman against her will. You can only divorce a woman against her will. And that's only Bisman before Rabbeinu Gershom. Rabbeinu Gershom made a harem that a man cannot divorce his wife against his will, against her will. And there's a note of Yehuda that discusses if you appoint a shliach, if a man appoints a shliach to divorce his wife against her will nowadays, that's a concept of Aveira. And we have a notion of Ein Shliach L'Davar Aveira. And there are two opinions in Taisa B'Metzi on Yudim Beis that if you appoint a Shliach to do something for you that is an Aveira, it's a question whether it takes effect. There are 2 days in Taisa B'Metzi on Yudim Beis. So the note of Yudah postulates in the Tshuva, if that Shliach goes ahead and throws the get at the woman or gives the get to the woman against her will, maybe it doesn't even take effect, Because Bizman Azeh Rabbeinu Gershom made a hirim. You cannot divorce one's wife against the rule, and therefore maybe the whole get doesn't get off the ground. That's how seriously we take this notion of a hirim to Rabbeinu Gershom. That we never, you know, the Rabbeinu Gershom put a caveat in that if you get 100 Rabbonim together, you can release the hirim to Rabbeinu Gershom. That's called a Heter Meir Rabbonim. Now that hirim of divorcing one's wife against her will, we never release, ever. What we do release, sometimes in certain extenuating circumstances, is that a man is not allowed to marry multiple women. That was a hirim to Rabbeinu Gershom. Min HaTorah, a man can marry multiple wives. But Rabbeinu Gershom made a hirim, you cannot marry more than one wife. Let's say a woman is, man is married to a woman, she becomes totally mentally unstable. She has to be institutionalized. And she doesn't realize what's going on at all. And let's say this will last for a long time. Let's say it's a young married couple, and Rahman al-Assad, such a terrible, terrible case, would come up, God forbid. If it came up, what is the man supposed to do? He cannot marry another woman. And he cannot accept the get, because a woman has to have her das. She has to be mentally stable to realize what is happening when she accepts a get. So what is the man supposed to do? So there is a concept called a hetemer rabbanim, that if you get 100 rabbanim from three different lands, from Shlosha Ratzos, from Eretz Israel, let's say America, and Europe, then you can have 100 rabbanim, and Rabban Soloveitchik would always tell us that you never allowed to sign on a heter meir rabbanim unless you yourself, he said, best bet is if you yourself have investigated it, or at least the three dayanim you know very well that are manning the beis din have looked into the case, because we can't just wantonly say, let a man wants to marry another woman, and we're going to allow it. So we're very hesitant about this. But that is the heter meir rabbanim, will allow that harem to allow a man to marry another woman. But we never amount to the harem that a man can divorce his wife against her will. To the degree that Noti Yehuda writes it might be an Aveira, and he'll stamp it as Ein Shliach L'Devar Aveira. Okay. So let's now continue now. Different applications we find in the Rishonim regarding this concept of Afkinu. There is a Rashba that writes in Gittin and Dafayin Chesem and Aleph. There is a concept that not only can a man, if he wants to divorce his wife, God forbid, can give the get in her hand, but he also can throw it in her courtyard or within her Dalad Amos, her 6 feet. An Amma is a foot and a half. So Arba Amos is 6 feet. If the get lands within 6 feet of her, we consider that to her accepting the get, and it's a good get. It's called Kinyan Dalad Amos. Says the Rashba, 1 second, Kinyan Dalad Amos is a Kinyan on a rabbinic level. How can a Kinyan on a rabbinic level give you the weight and strength to say that the woman has accepted it on a biblical plane in order for her to be called a divorcee now? Says, where did this come from? Says the Rashba, Afkinu l'Rabbanan Kiddushin Minei. Any time that a man divorces his wife through the notion of throwing the get within her 6 feet, the only reason why she's allowed to get remarried is because we unravel the Kiddushin. It's really not a get. It's the fact that we unravel the Kiddushin. That's the way we give the validity to the Arba Amos. Now, other Rishonim write the Ran that says it's Hefker based on Hefker, that we assume financially it becomes her domain. If it becomes her domain financially, so therefore we can say, even in a marital level, we'll allow the get to take place. But the Rashba takes it to the degree where he says, Afkinu. Afkinu l'Rabbanan L'Kiddushin Minei, to certify and legitimatize the Kinyan of Arba Amos. That's number one application. Number two, we find, Rashi writes in Meseches Psochim, Rashi says in Meseches Psochim and Daf Zayin and Aleph that if a man wants to be Mekadesh a woman with Chiti Kordenaisa, what is Chiti Kordenaisa? On Erev Pesach, Mishesh Oslomar, Chometz Nuksha. What's Chometz Nuksha? Chometz that's really not what? Edible. But he's Mekadesh with Chometz Nuksha, which is only Chometz Midrabon. Now, a man is not allowed to mekadesh a woman with isuri hana, like orla, let's say an apple, the first 3 years of a fruit tree are orla, or kiloi karen, a mixture of wheat and what? And grapes. You're not allowed to plant a vineyard next to a wheat field. Let's say you're mekadesh a woman with one of those grapes and one of those pieces of wheat. Not a good kedushin. But let's say you're mekadesh a woman with isuri hana mid the rabbanon, chametz nukshe, chitit kordenaisim. So the Ritva says in Sochem, you know why it's not good? Because not shava, putin. The Rabbanan declared it being usher, so therefore that guest is not worth the shava putin. So if it's not worth the shava putin, the kedushin won't be chal. Says Rashi, no. You know why that's not a good kedushin? Based on the principle afkinun l'rabbanan l'kedushin minei. The Rabbanan have removed the kedushin. They unravel the kedushin, and therefore if the Rabbanan declared this to be what? Aser mid the Rabbanan, therefore it's not a good kedushin. So you see another application. That's number two tonight that we see on the concept of invoking this concept of afkinin l'rabbanan l'kedushin minei. A third application that we find. The Nimuki Yosef writes, fascinating din, and this we learned in the Gemara last week. Is there a requirement to have a date in a get, a zman in a get? Is there a requirement? So the Gemara writes in Gittin on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, yes, there is a machlokas mishum ma tiknu zman begittin. What does tiknu connote? Midrabbanan. Why did the rabbis enact midrabbanan enact a zman in a get? And Reb Yochanan says, because we're afraid that a man might marry his niece. The Gemara says, there's an added mitzvah to marry one's niece. We mentioned not Mechuyev to, but Avram married Sarah. Gemara writes in Yevamos, it was an added mitzvah. What's the din if the woman, the niece, is mezana with another man? She'll be chayiv nisa if there were Adim and Hasrof, there were witnesses and warning. So what he'll do is, he'll divorce his wife, his niece, and he'll claim that she was divorced when she lived with the other man, because he doesn't want his niece to be executed. He might not like his niece, but he doesn't want to see her get killed. And therefore, there's a need to put a zman on a get. And Reish Lakish gives a different theory because of Peiris. Because the husband, when he marries the wife, the woman brings real estate in the marriage, and the husband has the right to eat the fruit. He can eat and eat the fruit, and if you don't put a date in the get, he'll say, even though he divorced her 2 months ago, he'll say, no, really the divorce happened 2 months later, and for those 2 months he claims he could eat fruit. So he'll steal money from her. He'll steal the ability to eat the fruit. So that's Reish Lakish's theory why there's a zman to get. So there's something that we have to think about for a second. Why does it say Mishum Ma Tiknu Zman Beget? Why is no biblical D'oraisa requirement to have a date and a get? Why does the Gemara only say rabbinically? And then Nimuki Yosef writes, you know the truth is in Sanhedrin, he writes, Nimuki Yosef in the fourth parak writes, yes, biblically, there is a requirement to have a date in a get. And he points to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed Beis, which discusses the concept called Drisha V'Chakira. What is Drisha V'Chakira? Drisha V'Chakira means that there are seven major questions that the Edim are asked by Beis Din when they come in and testify on a matter. Let's say a capital punishment case. They ask them where it was, when it was. They ask them seven major questions. They take one witness at a time. They interrogate them. And if the witnesses cannot answer one of those seven questions, or they contradict each other, we throw out the testimony. If, however, they are asked minor detail questions, which are called the bedikos, there are drisho v'chakiris, which are the seven major questions, and then there are the bedikos. The bedikos are what we call the minor questions. What color hat was the perpetrator wearing? Now, if the witnesses say they don't know, we do not throw out the testimony. The only time we throw out the testimony for bedikos is if they contradict each other. One witness said he was wearing a blue hat. One guy said he was wearing an orange hat. Then we'll throw out the testimony in such a case. And the truth is, the Mishnah writes in Makkos on Zayin Amanaf that Rabbi Kivin Rav Tarfon said there are three opinions. You know, whenever the death penalty question is asked, How does Halacha view the death penalty? It's an explicit mission in Marcus. The first three opinions view the death penalty as they're very wary about it. First opinion says that if a Beis Din executes someone once in 7 years, it's murderous. Second opinion says once in 70 years, it's murderous. The third opinion says, Rabbi Kivin of Tarfon, that if they would have been there, Bizman, the Beis HaMikdash Kayim, they would have made sure that no one would have been executed. Because they would have asked such detailed questions in the Bedikos, they would have tripped up the witnesses. And then Rabbi Shimon Gamliel concludes the mission and says, no. He says, you know what? The death penalty is a deterrent. It's important. And he says, if you have that attitude to Rabbi Kivin of Tarfon, you're going to increase the murders amongst the Jewish people. So it's an explicit mission. And Bizman HaZeh, we don't have Dini Nefashos. Why don't we have Dini Nefashos? Because you need three prerequisites. You need smicha, the real smicha. The smicha that I don't have is not the smicha for Moshe Rabbeinu. You need real smicha for Moshe Rabbeinu on down. You need the Kohanim to be serving in the Beis HaMikdash for Karbonos. And number three, you need the Sanhedrin to be sitting in the Lishkas HaGozes in the Beis HaMikdash. We don't have any of those three. You need all three. Therefore, there is no din of capital punishment, Bizman HaZeh, for Halakha. Maybe another time we'll discuss Noahite code, the concept of death penalty. That's another topic. But what you see from all this is that there's a requirement to have interrogations. Three Shiva Chakira, seven major questions for the Bedikos. So you need to have a date. You need to have a date. In a get, you need to have a date on a D'oraisa level, on a biblical level, says the Mukhi Yosef. And then the Rabbanim got rid of it. Why'd they get rid of it? A get will be kosher, D'oraisa without a date, because of Afkinu. Says the Mukhi Yosef, because of Afkinu. Every get is kosher without a date because of Afkinu. And then the Gemara in Gittin on Yajayin Amanal picks it up in the third stage in history. That Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish said that they reinstated the requirement of having a Zman. So the Gemara in Gittin on Yajayin Amanal picks it up in a third stage. That there's a need to have a Zman in a get. Fascinating. First to start off, you're right, so you need a Zman. Then Mid Rabbanan, they got rid of it because of Afkinu. Not that they got rid of it, but it's still good without it. And then the Rabbanan said, you have to reinstate it. Either because of Meshum Shem Yechapeh, because the issue of his niece, his concern of covering over for his niece, covering up for his niece with Yochanan, or the issue of Peiris like Reish Lakish. But the Gemara is picking up on a third stage. So that's the third application we've mentioned of Afkinu. The first tonight we mentioned was Arba Amos. Second one we mentioned was Chiti Kornanaisa, the Chometz case, Suri Durabonim. The third case we're mentioning now is the Mukhi Yosef. If you remember last week, this is Lishitoso, because the Mukhi Yosef said, why is one witness good to verify that a husband is dead to allow a woman to get remarried? The Mukhi Yosef rationale was also Afkinu, L'Rabbanu, L'Kedusha Minem. We assume they never were married. So Mukhi Yosef used that in these two applications. Okay. There's one other application that I want to mention before we move on to the sugya of onus, and that is the Ran and the Nedarim Daf Tzadi. The Ran and the Nedarim Daf Tzadi Amud Beis says a tremendous chiddush. The Mishnah writes in the Nedarim, last Mishnah in the Nedarim writes that if a woman says to her husband that she's married to her husband, she says that she was mezana with another man. So the Mishnah says we do not believe her. Tavi raya lidvareha. She must bring proof to her words. And the Ran is puzzled by why. Why can't we believe her? There's a principle called Shavya Nafshe Chaticha Yisur. If I say that this piece of meat in front of me is ham, I'm believed. Einot Amesim Matzmo Rosha within the rubric of Aedus, within the notion of testimony. This is within the rubric of Nemonis, of believability. In Aedus, you're absolutely right. Ain't on a Mesa Matzma Russia. But regarding the concept of what? Tanean Yilacha, she says it not in a basin. We don't believe her. She is Mechuyiv to live with her husband. She cannot claim she was Mezana with her another man willingly. If she is, we don't believe her. That's what the Mishnah writes. And the Ran is puzzled. What about Shavya Nafshe? So then what the Ran says? Unbelievable. The Ran says, if in the event she lived with another man, we unravel the Kedushin. and therefore they were never married at the time she lived with the other man. Because of Afkinu L'Rabbanan L'Kedushin Mineh. Even if she says Tmei Ani L'Kol.
Only if she says
Tmei Ani L'Kol. But what comes out from the Ron? When she lived with the other man, she wasn't married because of Afkinu. It's unbelievable. What's problematic with that Ron, which we don't find? Okay, so that we mentioned the Machlokas Rabbeinu Tam and the Reed, can you in essence abuse the rule of Afkinu? We said that. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, you basically can't. According to the Reed, you can't. But there is a sheet for sure to say you can't. What's the problem? According to that Ron, though, what should come out?
That if you say, with a husband anymore either.
He should have to remarry her. They're allowed to stay together, but based on the Ron's rationale, he should have to remarry her. We don't find that at all. We don't find it in the Mishnah and the Gemara. That's what the Ketzef Nivkar asks in his Sefer on the Ron. We don't find that the husband is obligated to remarry, but he should, based on this logic. Excellent. That's the Ketzef Nivkar has in the Ron. But again, that's another application of Afkinu L'Rabbanan tradition.
He's not allowed to. If a person is married to somebody and then lives with somebody else, they're not allowed to go back to the original person.
But if they were not married at the time she lived with the other man, no problem. That's what we're saying. When she lived, we say we unravel the kedushin. That's the kedushin of Ron. That's the parsha of Shad. Which we say, Tavi Rai was Barel. We don't believe her. We don't believe her because of Afkinu, the Ron says. You mean, or a non-Jew, you mean?
Anyone in that whole group would right. Become a donor.
Right.
But she couldn't marry a Cohen. If now she doesn't have back to her husband, the time of Quentin Ron, she couldn't marry, go back to her husband. Ron is very upset that she's a sickle man, that is, but it's another problem. Because
right, if it would be someone that would make her a zoner, and the Rambam writes what defines as someone that makes her a zoner, someone that she can't marry, she could not marry.
Right.
So if she lived with a not, like that's the din. That's all luck. If a Kohen wants to marry a woman, right, if he goes out with a woman, if she lived with a non-Jew, he can't marry her. We had that Shiloh, a friend of mine, became a Baal Tshuva, and he was going to marry a woman that also a Baal Tshuva. But if she lived with another, if she lived with a non-Jewish man, he can't marry her. If she lived with a Jewish man, that's fine. She doesn't become labeled as a zoner because she could have married him. That's a big shiloh. So you have to. That's something that you have to investigate. You're sorry? She can marry Yisrael or a Levi, but she can't marry a Kohen because she's labeled halakhically as a zoner. She's labeled as a halakhic zoner. He says Afkinu L'Rabbanan Kedushin Mineh.
It
says Tavi Raya L'Dvareha. So that's what you got to say to the Ron. I'm saying the problem with the Ron is we should find that he should have to remarry her. We don't find that. Absolutely. But I'm saying with the Yisrael and Levi, you should have to remarry her.
It's only, but he only says Afkinu if it turns out that we find out from other sources that it is true.
No, you don't necessarily have to say that. No, because you talk about with her anyway. You don't have to believe her.
If you find out from other stories,
no,
that
believe
her.
But based on Afkinu. No, it's based on Afkinu. We assume it's not. No, he's saying that the sock of Tavi Rav is based on Afkinu. He's learning shot in the Mishnah based on Afkinu. Yeah, go ahead.
What is the rationale to begin with Afkinu?
Well, because we don't want her necessarily to allow her to break up and dissolve this marriage. If she says she lived with another man, let's say she, you know, casts her eyes on another man. She's interested in another man. That's a terrible thing that might go on in society. Like we said that there's a concept of prutzos. But there are two types of women, modest women and women that are prutzos, that are not tzanuah. So it's a public policy type of din in that Mishnah. We're very concerned about that.
But there's a rationale.
Absolutely. Without a doubt. Yeah, go ahead.
Wouldn't a married woman who's caught
if there are witnesses in warning. If there are no witnesses in warning, it creates a stoppage to the marriage, not a stoppage, a termination of the marriage. He has to divorce her, she loses her ksuba, but you cannot execute her. You need witnesses and a warning. And you have to have an acceptance of the warning also. She has to say yes.
It's not enough to say, what else is to say, you know?
No, we can't, like was pointed out, in Adam Mesa Masama Russia, a person cannot incriminate themselves. So therefore, regarding stopping the marriage, that's one issue. Regarding executing something else. Yeah, go ahead. Kids will be called, excellent question, kids will be called a pogrom. That's a very important question he asked. Because many people do not realize the halakhic definition of a mamzer is someone that is born from a relationship where there's a chiyuv kares or more, a chiyuv misa. For example, if a woman lives with another man, if she was a married woman, lives with another man, she would be executed with chenek, with edim and asra. A child born from that marriage, from that relationship, is called a mamzer. If a man and woman are single, and they live together not in the context of kedushin, and they have a child, that child is not a mamzer. Because that prohibition was not a chiyuv kares. It was a lav, or at best, it was a lav at best, a negative commandment. Maybe it was only listed in the Rabbanan. That child is called a pogum. Pogum means, Rav Moshe writes in the Tshuvas, Rav Moshe finds his atzal, where it has no halachic nafkamina. A pogum has no halachic nafkamina. I'm sorry?
Even for a kohen, for that matter?
Even for a kohen. It's a pogum. Yeah, they're not a cholo. No, it's a pogum. That's the din of a pogum. That's the luck of a pogum. Pogum has no nafkamina, says Rav Moshe. Okay? There is no, just we label that as knowing, not to confuse that as becoming called a mamzer. A mamzer has to be chiyuv kares or more. And there's one exception. We have to get this. Actually, two exceptions. Many people might mistake this. If a man lives with a married woman and she was a nidin, his wife would say, they weren't practicing taharas mishpacha, and they have a child. That's a chiyuv kares. So isn't the child that's generated a mamzer? No. That's the Gemara in Yavamis on Memtesim and Aleph. The Gemara digs up a special pasuk to tell me that that child is not a mamzer. And number two, the kedushin are tosin. If a man is mekadesh and needed, how is it chal? Special gzeiras kasuv. Second exception is a sota. If a man lives with his wife, who's a suffolk that she suspected as to whether she lived with another man, they're bringing her up to Yishalayim, a child produced from that marriage, the kedushin is chal, and the child also is not a mamzer. Okay? But that's an important chiddush, and a very important question. You said we cannot confuse that. Many people feel that a mamzer is translated as an illegitimate child. That is incorrect. That is an incorrect definition. Okay? We have to note that. Okay. That's the concept of a punk. That's the kind of punk. It has no nafkimina, says Rav Moshe. None at all. A ben nidin has no nafkimina or dina. It can be the gadol hador. That's what he writes in the Tshuvas. Okay. Now, one last application. There's a Rashi in Shabbos on Daf Kuf Mem Hey Amud Beis that explains the Gemara that says aid mi pi aid is kosher for edus isha. What does aid mi pi aid mean? Hearsay. If I heard from my friend that there was a robbery in such and such bank, if I go into Beis and they throw me right out, they don't accept that. Al Pishnayin Aidim Yakum Dover means witnesses that saw it, eyewitnesses. Hearsay is not acceptable for financial cases, for capital punishment cases, for marital cases. Says the Gemara, though, for one case it's acceptable, if to verify that a husband is dead, to allow a woman to get remarried. The Gemara says, Eidus Isha, Eid Mi Pi Eid is kosher. Hearsay is kosher in the context of Eidus Isha. The Gemara doesn't say why. It says Rashi and Shabbos Kuf Mem Hayim Beis Afkinu LeRabbanon Kedushin Minei. We accept hearsay to allow a woman to get remarried because in essence we're unraveling the Kedushin, and therefore we're not certifiably saying the husband is dead. We're going to unravel the Kedushin and therefore allow this woman to get remarried. So we've mentioned many applications. But, as we said from the Rosh, as we prefaced from now to this year, again, we're hesitant to expand it. That's why I wanted to go through the different applications to say that it is applied by the great Rishonim in certain cases, But for us to say whimsically and wantonly we're going to do it anytime we want, that the Rashbam is absolutely not. We have no rule. And the stunning proof is from the case where the Shliach took the woman himself. It was called trickery, but we did not unravel the Kedushin. And the case of Mekadesh Eidim with rabbinically invalid witnesses, the Rambam says, I'm going to stop it. I'm not sure whether it's good or not. Why don't you say Afkinu? Because we're not willing to say Afkinu. And you know what? If you look from today until tomorrow, in the Rambam and the Mishnah Torah, right, what does the Rambam write in his Akdama to the Mishnah Torah? Yad HaChazaka, 14 books. After he finishes the Sefer, he says, all you need is a Tanakh and the Mishnah Torah. The Rambam wasn't a Baal Gaiva, he was a Tzaddik. But the truth is, he codifies every din in Shas. All you need is a Tanakh and the Mishnah Torah, says the Rambam. And you can go to the other side of the world and you'll know Kol HaKor HaKumi. The Rambam never once mentions Afkinu in the whole concept of the Yad HaChazaka. Never once. What does he do with our Gemara? He says, ain't onus begitten. He paskins ain't onus begitten. Remember we said there are two lashonos? Whether you say ain't onus begitten, and therefore it's a good get, or yesh onus begitten is gimel and aleph, and therefore it's not a good get. The Rambam paskins, and here goes Gerushin, ain't onus begitten. Straight up, ain't onus begitten. He doesn't say snuos, he doesn't say prutzos, he doesn't say afkinu. He says ain't onus begitten, and it's a good get. Because the Rambam postulates the concept onus rachmana patra, and that's where the lead in now will begin the topic of onus rachmana patra. If you take a look at the Rashi, let's take a look at the Rashi on the third line, where Rashi says to be yoraisa lo habikita. Rashi says on a yoraisa level, this case where the man gave his wife a get, and he says if he doesn't return in 12 months, it'll be a get. Regardless of why he doesn't return, the reason why he might not return might be because of an onus. We don't care. Ain't onus begitten, and therefore the get is considered to be a valid get. Why is that? What is the concept of onus come from? Says Rashi the following: Dimidiraisa lohavi gita shematzinu tanas onus minatora shenemar ulanara losasa dover. There is a rule that the Gemara mentions in the Dharam and Chafsayim and Av, onus rachmana patre. If a person does something out of duress or cannot do something out of duress, the Torah exempts him. If a man, God forbid, rapes a woman, the Chumash writes in Parsh Kitetze, the woman did nothing. She is not executed at all. The man played the full role, he will be punished, not the woman. This is the source of onus rachmana patra. And therefore, on the derisa level, how could this get be a good get? He's yelling. He wants to cross the river. He can't. How could you say this could be a good get? On a derisa level, it shouldn't be a good get. Should not be a good get. Midrabanan, they said it's a good get based on afkinu. Here, Rashi says a tremendous chiddush of onus rachmana patra. And he quotes this pasuk. Rabbi Chonon Wasserman, Zecher Tzadik Libroche, in his Shiurim, Kovetz Shiurim, quotes from the Sefer Chemda Shlomo and claims that one can understand the concept of onus rachmana patre in one of two ways. One can understand onus rachmana patre that the action that I did, if I did it out of duress, we don't view as an action at all. It's not labeled halakhically as a maisa. Onus rachmana patra is mafkia. It does not allow the maisa, the action, to be recognized as an action in a halakha. That's the first possibility to conceptually understand onus rachmana patra. That we do not let the maisa get off the ground. It's not labeled as a halakhic action. That's one possibility. The other is to say the following. It certainly is labeled as an action, but the Torah will not punish you for such an act if you did it out of duress. But we consider it to be labeled as an action. We label it as an action. But you're exempt from punishments. You're part of promotion. Similar to a shogi. The second possibility. Absolutely. Rabbi Chonon Wasserman, the great tzaddik, the Gaon Rabbi Chonon Wasserman, you know, he came over to America And then he went back to Baranovich. Everyone told him, don't go back, because the Nazis would come. And he said he had to go back to be with his students, and the Nazis ended up killing him. And he ended up perishing. He's a great goal, Rebbe Chaim Vossen, Talmud of the Chofetz Chaim. So he writes from the Chemda Shlomo and Avodah Zarah and Dalam and Aleph that if someone forces a Jewish man or Jewish woman to bow down to an animal and to deify a certain animal, to declare that animal as a deity, is that animal able to be sacrificed on the Mizbeach? Normally, an animal that has been deified and been treated as a deity, you're not allowed to put on the Mizbeach and offer as a korban in the Beis HaMikdash. In this case, though, do we allow that animal to be put on the Mizbeach? Says Rebbe Chanan from the Chemda Shlomo and Avodah Zarah and Dal and Ralph, the shame, Rava, Shor Shenevad Ba'onis is Mutter. We paskin Mutter. It's considered to be Mutter. It's mutter to be put on the Mizbeach. Which possibility in Onus Rachmana Patra does that show? The first. He's not going to be punished for his act of being forced to be bowed down. But do you label it as a mice? If you label it as a mice, then that animal should be stamped as a deity and should be prohibited to be put on the Mizbeach. Or no? Do you say that it's not considered to be what? It's not considered to be a mice at all. If it's not an action at all, then you can very clearly put that animal on the Mizbeach. Says Rava, you can. Shor Shenevad Ba'onis is Mutter. Says Rav Ochanan from the Chemda Shlomo, you see that Rashi is saying, Onis Rachmana Patre means the first possibility, that we don't even view it as an action. Unse Keman Delo Ovid. Machlekes Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish. That the Ran quotes from Yushalmi Kedushin. Is it Onis like he's done it? Or is it onus like he hasn't done it?
It's like if you're forcing a person to do something, that means the person doesn't want to do it. And if he doesn't want to do it, it's because he doesn't believe in it. So no matter what he's saying, means nothing.
Excellent. But this is Rebbe Chanan's proof. Rebbe Chanan wants to claim, you see from Rashi, that he understood onus Chaman HaPatrim is not called a Maisa. That's why the animals will be able to put on his back. If you hold like the second possibility, that animal should be what? Should be prohibited to be put on the Mizbeach. Because we view it as an action, you're just exempted from being punished. So why is the animal mutter to be put on the Mizbeach? So they say from the Brisker Rav, exactly what you pointed out. The Brisker Rav, the Rav's uncle, the Soloveitchik's uncle, the Brisker Rav, said that's no proof. Avodah Zarah is special. The Gemara writes in Sanhedrin Samach Aleph from the Beis, if you're Ovid Me'ava Me'ira, you serve an idol. Because let's say a man's fallen in love with a non-Jewish woman and she wants him to come to church with him. Rachmana Litzlan. That's the only reason why he's going to church. Because he's fallen in love with this non-Jewish woman. What's the din? He's putter from the Avodah Zarah, according to Rava. Let's say he's doing it out of yira. He's scared of a non-Jew. That's threatening him. He's also putter. So why do you have to give up your life, Tosfos says? In Samach Aleph and Beis, in the top of the Amud? Because of Kiddush Hashem. Lechachila, you have to give up your life. To be Mekadosh Shem Shemayim. But if it's stamped as an Avodah Zarah, if you did it, are you going to be executed? No way. You're not going to be executed. So when it comes to Avodah Zarah, exactly, you need Kavanah. If you don't have the proper Kavanah, it's Nishkin Avodah Zarah. It's not called Avodah Zarah. So it's a special din by Avodah Zarah. But regarding Onus Rachmana Patre in general, how would we view Onus Rachmana Patre? How would we view the concept of Onus Rachmana Patre? The way we would view it is what? We would view it as really, it's considered to be a what? Maisa? We would consider it to be a Maisa? You are just exempt from being punished. Avodah Zarah, the reason why the animals wanted to put on his back, because Avodah Zarah needs special Kavanah. And if without having special Kavanah, it's not called Avodah Zarah. So you have no proof from there. That's how we have to say from the Brisker Rav. That's what you'd have to say. Yes, go ahead, keep it. Now that's what I'm saying. Tosa says it's called Yahari Vayavar because it's a din of Kiddush Hashem. Al Kiddush Hashem, the halacha of Kiddush Hashem mandates you that if you're put under duress of one of the Gimel of Averis, you must give up your life. But is it stamped as a Mice of Averis? No, it's not.
The Mice of Averis is not the
Machayiv. Right, the Mice of Averis is not the Machayiv. The Kiddush Hashem is what the Machayiv is, and that's why it's only a Lekachim. That's what Tosa says. It's not Machayiv from Beis and Sanhedrin. Yeah, go ahead.
Well,
woman is raped, she doesn't even do a matzah at all. So it's something to either case.
Well, that's a good ha'ara. But the truth is, she did do a maisa. There was halakhically, you're right. When we get to that sugya, she was karka olam, but she did play somewhat of a role. So we definitely say she's exempt. So do you view it as it's not halakhic maisa, or do you view it as a maisa, but she's just part of the promotion? You can't say she wasn't there. She was there. Okay, but I'm saying, the question is how you formulate it. Do you formulate it as if halakhically you don't treat it as if it's a maisa? Or maybe you could formulate it as a maisa with the patur of an onshin. And you might say what the nafkamin is, what the nafkamin we just gave, when the animal is mutter put on his back. So we're going to, let's try to investigate this. Now we're trying this claim Rashi holds the first possibility that it's not called an action at all. Yeah, go ahead. No, but the animal is being served. The animal is being served as a deity. That the special halacha, that it's disrespectful to Hashem to put that animal on the mizbeach.
Is the animal raised to the level of some kind of cognition?
No, absolutely, no, he's not. But the way you could view this din is that it's disrespectful to Hashem that you have this cow that many people bow down to and you put him in the mizbeach. Public policy, we're very wary about avodah zarah, especially the Beis HaMikdash. Especially in case of the Beis HaMikdash. I'm sorry? Right, like similar like Esnan Zona. Let's say a man contracts a prostitute and he gives her a cow for payment. That cow can never be offered on the mizbeach. Similar to this.
Yeah.
Similar. You're absolutely right. It's an issue of disrespect.
Why not even for enough?
What do you mean?
When
right, but it's not, even if you don't derive any hanah from it. Okay, you're not deriving any, you know, because mitzvahs, we have a general rule that mitzvahs lav lehenos niyu. So you can't say that I get a mitzvah of korbanos, that's not hana. Rashi says in Rosh Hashanah, mitzvahs are not given over for hana, they're just to accept the yoke of Hashem. So that's what
you...
Right. But animal's not able to be put on his back because it's like ma'us legavoa. Disgusting. Disgusting legavoa. Would that animal be usher b'hanah? If you serve an animal as an idol to be a deity, why would that... Avodah Zarah is usher b'hanah. I can't hear you. Right, a mountain doesn't. Are you sure an animal? Are you sure an animal? It's mos legavoa. Certainly, it's mos legavoa. Okay. You mean an animal? Let's say if you buy down to a getchkin, to a little idol, that idol is usher b'hanah. Right. So the hema, okay, but I'm saying it's definitely mos legavoa. It's definitely mos legavoa. Let's say a kohen. God forbid that serves Avodah Zarah. He's possible of Duchen. Can't Duchen. He's Ma'us Legavoa. He's repulsive to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what Moshe Soloveitchik, the Rav, said from his father, that a Kohen that's Mechal Shabbos Befar Hesia, can he Duchen? So Mishnah Berurah writes the Pharisee, he cannot Duchen. So Moshe Soloveitchik said, yes, he can Duchen, because it's a special din of Ma'us Legavoa. Avodah Zarah is Ma'us Legavoa. Chil Shabbos is bad, but it's not considered to be Ma'us Legavoa. That's what the Kula. That was the Kula Ramosh Soloveitchik against the Chofetz Chaim. Okay. Let's take it a step further with Rashi. Yeah, go ahead, Avi. And then we gotta go to Kula. We'll close the Kula. Yeah, go ahead. That's what he wants to say. You know why? Because if you look in the case in the Dorim and Chof Zion, where the phrase of Onus Ramona Patri comes up, the Gemara has a case where it says a man gives over an IOU. Let's say a man gives a check to some fellow for $500. He says, if he doesn't return in 30 days, keep the check. 29th day comes, the river, he cannot cross the river. He wants his 500. He doesn't want to give it up. So the Gemara says, Lonara Lotasa Dover. The Gemara says, don't quote me that pasuk. The Chitema Ketola Shiny. Maybe that's only a localized din to exempting the woman from punishment. And then the Gemara goes on to say, no, Vatanya, but we have the klal of onus rechon patra even outside the area of what? Of onshin. So that's where Rabbi Chana, why is Rashi keeping alive the vestige of the pasuk? Look who the Gemara threw out the pasuk in the Dharm Chav Zion. Rashi quotes the pasuk that was a Havamina. So Rabbi Chana wants to say, you see, Rashi obviously when the Gemara in the Dharm, no, the Gemara did not throw it out. When the Gemara says, well, now we'll talk to the Dharm, it's not just localized to Onshin, applies to everything. So once you apply it outside of Onshin, you want to say the Mahalat, the Shikul Torah, that an onus is not considered to be a Maisa. That's what Rabbi Chana wants to point out. Okay? That's what he wants to say from Rashi. Okay, let's just mention one more Rashi, and then we'll close with Chumash, which I think seems to be contradictory to this, Rabbi Chanan in the Rashi. There is a Rashi in Maseches Yevamos on Daf Ayin Amud Aleph, in the beginning of Perek Ha'Aro. The Mishnah writes that a Kohen Aro, a Kohen that is uncircumcised, cannot eat Truma, cannot be given Truma, cannot eat it, prohibited. What is the case in the Mishnah of a Kohen Aro not eating truma? If he's malicious, obviously he can't eat truma. Well, let's see. Rashi says that the brothers have died because of Mila. He had two brothers. We mentioned this when we discussed Katlonis. The two young babies died because they bled to death. The third baby, we don't give him the Mila. We wait till he gets older, where he'll be old enough where he won't bleed to death. Until that time, can he eat truma? Says Rashi, no. Kohen Aro can eat truma. Rashi defines it as being a Kohen Aro that's an onus. Why do you penalize the man as an onus? What do you see from that, Rashi? What do you see from that, Rashi? That Rashi viewed onus Rahmana Patra as being a what? We see the Maisa's there, exactly. He's stamped as an Aro. And that prevents him from eating the truma. Okay. The truth of the matter is, though, you don't say he's not called in the category of an Aro, therefore can eat truma. What does Rabbeinu Tam say there? It tells you Shonim. How does he learn Pshat in the Mishnah? He says the man is a Mumar L'Arlus. He doesn't believe in the mitzvah of Mila. That's what the Mishnah is talking about. A Kohen Aro can't eat truma because he doesn't believe in the mitzvah. He maliciously is not doing the mitzvah of Mila. That man can't eat truma. But if his brothers died because of Mila, Rabbi Natan would say, definitely he can eat truma. Says Rabbi Yosef Engel, what's the machlokas? Machlokas, how you view onus rachmana patre. Is it a maisa? Is it a status? You're just exempted from being punished? Or do you say, no, it's not even a status? And therefore what? Rabbi Natan says, if it's not even a status, you can eat truma. Rashi says, no, it's a maisa. So don't you see from the Rashi there, that onus rachmana patra seems to say that the action is an action, the status is a status, you're just exempted from punishments. That's Rashi and Yevamos Daf Ayin. Rebbe Chanan, the Chemnitz Shlomo, and Rashi here, in Ksubas Daf Gimel Rav, seems to say that what? Rashi holds that what? An onus is not considered to be a maisa b'chlal. Seems to be an apparent stira in Rashi. Yeah, go ahead, Akiva. But I'm saying on a conceptual level, when you say onus rachmana patre, let's assume unsa command the law of it.
Right.
You're
not going to create a mitzvah
of
the onus.
I understand, but it's just that's what I'm saying. So why do you say that there's a status? Why do you assume there's a status that he's called an oro? You should say it's out of the wreck. You can't do a meal or bleed to death. Why? Why call him an oro?
You need a mitzvah. There's no mitzvah. Because there is an onus, you're not going to say that.
No, but I'm saying also that you shouldn't allow the status of Aro to get off the ground. When does the status of Aro get off the ground? At day 8. Before day 8, we'll go into it more next week. We'll pick it up with this. After day 8, I'm saying the status of Aro shouldn't even get off the ground. The status, no, it's not a Metzius. I'll prove it to you it's not a Metzius. The Meshachofa says, Hashem spoke to Avram Avinu all the time. Then Hashem commands him to do the meal and he falls on his face. Says the Meshach Rachman, why all of a sudden does he fall on his face? He was talking to Hashem all the time. Because Hashem had commanded him to do Mila, and he hadn't done it. He became a mitzvah, commanded to do the mitzvah Mila. It's disrespectful that an Aro speaks to Hashem, he falls on his face. You need a status of Aro to be created. Before day 8, you're not called an Aro. So I'm saying that status should not get off the ground.
Why doesn't day 8 create the status?
Because he's not a mitzvah. He can't do the Mila. The requirement of being oral stems from the fact you're a mitzvah. So I'm saying maybe it's an apparent contradiction in Rashi. Yeah, go ahead. Then we'll close with a Dvar Torah and Chumash. Yeah, go ahead. Oh, we're going to talk about Korban Pesach next week. There's a whole Rambam about it. Excellent. We'll talk about Korban Pesach Lineta next week. Are we having a shiur next week or Thanksgiving? Wednesday night. So are we on for next week? So yes or no? Yes. Okay. So yes. All right. So we're going to talk about a Lineta next week. Let's close with a word in Chumash. Yeah. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about Turkey. Is Turkey kosher? Maybe we'll touch a little bit about that. But just a short word in Chumash. This parsha discusses our parsha this week about Yaakov Avinu and the notion that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises him Ushmar Sicha, that he will guard him everywhere he goes. So the Gemara in Brachos on the Dalam and Aleph writes, Yaakov Avinu was very scared of Esav. Why? Hashem promises you. What is he afraid of? Says the Gemara Brachos Shema Yigro Machet. He was afraid that maybe he had sinned from after that Haftacha, and maybe Hashem would not watch him to the degree that Hashem had said. This apparently can be understood with the next Gemara, three blot later in Brachos and Av Zayin Amud Aleph, where the Gemara writes, if Hashem tells a Navi a prophecy, and the Navi tells the Jewish people, that promise and prophecy never will be changed. But if Hashem tells the Navi himself, and he doesn't say it to the Jewish people, just between Hashem and the Navi, that can be changed. That's how the Meshech Chacham explains that Hashem did not get upset at Avram when Avram was told he would have Yitzchak, because Avram laughed. Why did Avram laugh? Because he was afraid, because it's possible, even though Hashem promised it, he might be have done sin subsequently, and that might change the promise of Hashem. But Hashem got upset at Sarah, because Avram told Sarah. And once a Navi tells someone else, that can never be changed. And she had no right to not believe it. That's why Hashem got upset at Sarah. That's a public policy. Once it's given to what? To the people from the Navi, that can never change. Oh. Says Rabbi Chanan in the Kovetz Ma'amarim, beautiful Rabbi Chanan. We mentioned Rabbi Chanan in the Shiurim and Lomdus, Kovetz Shiurim. In the Kovetz Ma'amarim, he asked the following Sefirah. The Rambam writes in Shmona Prakim. He contradicts himself to Mor Nebuchim. Because there in Mor Nebuchim, he writes the following in Shmona Prakim, that he criticizes Yaakov Avinu for not having the proper Bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the question is, based on what we just said, why should he criticize Yaakov Avinu? Hashem told Yaakov Avinu himself. Yaakov didn't tell anyone that Hashem promised he would guard him. So it could be that maybe if he would have sinned, and you have to keep in mind, Esav had in his pocket the mitzvah of Kibud Av Va'em, and he had in his pocket the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. He lived in Eretz Yisrael, Esav. Those are two big squeals. Kibud Av Va'em and living in Eretz Yisrael. Yaakov was the pachat, and the Rambam criticized him. But why does the Rambam criticize him? Yaakov had a good right to be scared, because the promise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have been changed. Maybe Yaakov even did talk a sin. So writes Rabbi Chanan the following answer. There's a difference between bitachon and what we would call chisayon. We know the Vilna Gaon explains that it's tov. What do we say the pasuk in Tehillim? I need a siddur. Nivtoch b'nevim. What is the siddur that we say in Hallel? Tov lachsos b'Hashem nivtoch b'nevim. Tov lachsos b'Hashem nivtoch b'nevim. What does it mean, lachsos? Chisayon means reliance. Granted, Yaakov could have had doubts about the special bitachon that Hashem promised him, because maybe Yaakov might have sinned. But the general chisayon, reliance that every Jew and Jewess has to have in Hashem, that Yaakov Avinu is criticized by the Rambam that he was lacking. Tov lachasos b'Hashem mibtoch b'nevim. It's better to have a general reliance on Hashem then if a person promises you from A to Z, out of the tough he'll do it, you can count on the general alliance of Hashem, even though Hashem didn't tell you he's going to do it for you, that is considered to have more weight than a promise verbally from your best friend. Because Chisayon is this general alliance every Jew has to have in Hashem. And therefore, Yaakov Avinu was lacking in that general Chisayon. And that's why the Rambam criticized him. On the Bitachon that Hashem promised, that was perhaps could have been stripped away from him, that made him sin. But the Rambam writes he was lacking the Chisayon. And we should strive and learn the lesson that Rabbi Chanan understands from the Rambam. We always have to realize that Hashem, we have Bitachon, but we have a new concept that maybe is not so familiar to us called Chisayon. And we always have to have every walk of our life, every footstep, we should be assured that we have Chisayon Hashem, whether it be trials or tribulations, God forbid sad times or happy times, that we should follow in the footsteps of the Avos, that not just Bitachon, but we should try for what we call Chisayon. Everyone have a good Shabbos.